Well, hey, we are in Habakkuk chapter 2. We're going to look at, there's the 10 or the 5 woes there. And what the idea there is they're speaking judgment to the Babylonians. They speak to the Babylonians, but they also speak towards anyone in that position where they're using evil to attain their goals. And like we introduced last week, there's several portions within those woes that are scorning or mocking or their proverbial sayings. Many of them, and I'll try to trace some of them back to the Proverbs where they already says, you know, he who builds his house with ill-gotten gain, you know, will perish or something. And the Babylonians are right in that cycle. They're violating all of the Proverbs. And so that's being brought out as Habakkuk is writing. He's drawing on the Proverbs or the illustrations within the Proverbs of the Babylonians, just violating reality. Similar to what we see in our own culture. It's like, this is truth, this is reality, but you disregard that and you start building over here on this, you know, imaginary reality. You're guaranteed you're going to fall. You don't need to have great wisdom. You don't need to have great insight. You don't have to have just a run of bad luck. Because you're building in falsehood, it's going to collapse. I mean, Jesus said something similar when he said, you know, he who hears my words and does them is like a man who built his house on a rock. But the one who doesn't is like building a house on the sand. It's going to fall every time. And so Habakkuk is addressing that. So in chapter 2 of Habakkuk, we begin with the Lord replying to Habakkuk's second complaint. And I'll just read very quickly chapter 2, verse 2. Then the Lord replied, write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end. It will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. Then he says, and what he's talking about is, again, it's a cycle of just nation rising up, overcoming nation. It's just going to continue on forever. Well, the end, it speaks of the end. There's going to be a day where God puts this to a stop. That's ultimately going to be the second coming. But meanwhile, concerning the Babylonians who are, you know, maybe it was the Assyrian cycle and the Babylonians overtook the Assyrians, and now the Babylonians are rising in power. It's like, what's going to be the stop? Well, they're going to cycle through just like everybody else. So these five woes that we're going to see are being spoken to Babylon, but they could have applied to Assyria. They're going to apply to any power that rises up and starts living Hamas, violently oppressing other people. And so now we've got two groups of people. We're going to have the proud, and we're going to have those who in their soul realize they are weak, or they've got a fault, they've got a sin nature, they need help. And there's going to be the man who lives by faith. And the proud are going to be the one who maybe they see their weakness, or they recognize that they have problems in life. They're going to try to overcome those by oppressing others, by violating, you know, good conscience. They're going to violate God's law, and they're going to try to protect themselves with their own, you know, accumulation, their own oppression. Well, that person is going to perish. But there is going to be the person who looks inside of them, because there's something wrong with their soul. The person that looks and sees, I need help, I need God, and they cry out for help, that person has faith. He is going to be justified by God, meaning God is going to, you know, remove this from him and place justification. He is going to live. And that's this next verse right here. Verse 4, see, he's puffed up, pride. His desires are not upright. Something's wrong with his soul. But the righteous will live by his faith. And then we begin, indeed, wine betrays him, this person. He is arrogant and never at rest because he is as greedy as the grave and like death is never satisfied. This person who is proud, who tries to compensate for their own sin nature, there's no satisfying them. Once they become violent, once they become wicked, once they become Hamas, once they start going after evil means of protecting themselves, there's no end to what they will do. It's like the grave, like Sheol. It can never be full. Because he is greedy as the grave and like death is never satisfied, he gathers to himself all the nations and takes captive all the peoples. And then in verse 6, will not all them taunt him with ridicule, scorn, saying? And so because this proud person conquers the earth, he himself is going to perish. And here begins the cycle of the five woes. Now, we looked at this last week, verse 6b, chapter 2, verse 6b. Will not all of them taunt him with ridicule and scorn, saying? Now, there's more to that verse right here. But who are they? Will not they? They are going to be, for example, as this cycle goes through and the Babylonians rise up and they begin crushing these different people groups, there's going to be a time where Babylon is on its downward side and going to be overthrown. These are the very same people they conquered are going to be they who will taunt Babylon as Babylon collapses. For example, on the rise, Babylon conquered Persia. They conquered Mede, many other people. But on their downward side, guess who it was? It was the Persians and the Medes who came in and overtook the Babylonians. So this is in 6, where are we at here? Habakkuk 6:06, around that time period, Babylon is rising in power, and Habakkuk is being told by God that the Babylonians are going to be used by God to judge Judah, to judge Jerusalem. And Habakkuk's wondering, why are you doing this? God says, well, they're going to serve as a purpose, but they're going to cycle through, and they themselves will be crushed. Every one of these empires, every one of these worldly powers will be defeated. And here he says, they will arise, chapter 2, verse 6, will not all of them taunt him with ridicule and scorn, saying. Now, the NIV's got these words, taunt. Will they all not taunt? And then another word they've got is ridicule and scorn. And these are loaded words. And I've got on your page, page one of the notes, I've got the English Standard Version at the top. Shall not all these take up their taunt? There the English Standard uses the word taunt. Against him with scoffing. They use the word scoffing there. And with riddles. Now, I've got each of those words circled in the transliteration. And this word here, this taunt, is a word that means a proverb. Taunting, if this is the, again, this word would be taunting right here. And then the next one is a riddle. So you can see the correlation. They're not synonyms by any means, but they are. The ideal here is these are all scorning, mocking, scoffing, looking down upon someone, but you're speaking in riddles, meaning it needs to be interpreted, meaning maybe the person you're mocking doesn't even understand what you're saying because it's so above their head. For example, the Babylonians think, this is going to be a great idea. We're going to oppress all these people, take all of their gold, all of their best people, and bring them back to Babylon, and we're going to never be defeated. It's like, okay, Proverbs says, he who builds his house like that is going to perish. And so you can say that. It's like, how can we perish? We've got everybody under our control. Because things change. This is not the way reality is going to be. So it'd be a riddle. They can't figure it out. But it's actually scorning their behavior. And again, proverbs that are going to be said. Things that are like warnings. If you look down here, and again, we did a little bit of this last week. I'll just read through these notes right here. These three words. Because that's what's going to take place in these five woes. They're going to be taunting, scoffing, riddles. There's going to be proverbs. There's going to be ridicule. There's going to be, you know, scorning taking place. First of all, the word woe, point two, comes from the Hebrew word H-O-W or H-O-Y. And the closer in the English, it's good to say it's a woe because it's woe, this is what's going to happen. But it could be translated aha or ah. I mean, it's not like, woe is you. It's like, aha, you're not going to get away with this. Aha, caught you. Aha, this isn't going to work out like you think it is. It's laughing. Aha, this isn't going to work. You think you're in charge, but aha, you don't understand. This riddle, It's like, you don't get it, do you? And not necessarily laughing, but it's more than just, oh, woe unto you. It's more like, it is a woe. It's not good news, but it's aha. That would be another way of looking at it. All these refer to nations and peoples who have been gathered and collected by the arrogant. And I point that out. Now, point four. The five woes include these three parts identified with the three technical terms. And I've listed them here on the board. But the first one, I've got it circled, is the word in the Hebrew. It's Masal. I'm not sure how I should do this, if I should even waste my time writing them. But Masal is the first one. Now, this is now, again, they're going to have some overlap. But Masal, it means a proverb. It's a taunt in the English and NIV. So in the transliteration you've got right above, it's a proverb. They'll take up a proverb against you. English Standard Version and NIV say they'll take up a taunt against you. The second word is masel. It's a saying. It's a ridicule. It's scoffing. It comes from the book of Hebrews. I've got that written down there below. See, I made a mistake. Sometimes these masel. Okay, wait. Let me look. Yeah, that's got punctuated wrong. The second word is taunting. It is M-E-L-I-S-A, the key word being Lisa, which means to scorn or to deride or to mock. It is used of an ambiguous, elusive saying that needs interpreting. So that second word, M, that would be something similar to a riddle, maybe some kind of a proverb. It's like you say it, but you almost need someone to come by and explain what was being meant. All three of these words, Masel, Melissa, and then the last one that we'll look at on next, come in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 6. Now, I've got Proverbs chapter 1, verse 6 written out there in the with a transliteration. And do I have that on the next page? Yeah, there it is. Point C2, Proverbs 1, 6. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. That's on page 1, C2. That's Proverbs 1, 6. And all three of those words, and the third one is H-I-D-O-T. All three of those words are included in chapter 1, verse 6 of Proverbs. And I've got that written down there in the transliteration on the bottom of, the transliteration and the interlinear on the bottom of page 1. It says, to understand a proverb, masel. Now, these are all used, in a sense, in a positive way. To understand a proverb and an enigma, would be Melissa, the words of the wise and their hidat, or their riddles. And so Proverbs is saying, if you study Proverbs, you'll be able to understand these things. But in Habakkuk, these same words are being used to speak to someone who doesn't understand them. And instead of being wisdom and advice to them that they can understand and apply to their life, you've already bypassed the understanding of these things. And so now they become, we're mocking you with them. We're scorning you. We're telling you the same riddles, and you don't get it. And so you can kind of see how those words are being used. That last one, hadat, means a riddle. It's the ideal of an elusive saying and includes a paradox. And they may include words with double meanings. And I can try to show you, I'm going to try to do the best I can of drawing this out. But sometimes the words, like for example, in one, the word house is going to be used. And he's building his house. But that word house can refer to the dwelling, like the houses, the city. But it also refers to the dynasty. So Nebuchadnezzar is building his house, his dwelling, and his dynasty. But as he's building it, he's using evil gain to protect his dwelling and using evil gain to protect his dynasty so they rule forever. But because he's using evil to do this, his dwelling will be lost and his dynasty, he's going to lose his house, and he's going to lose his house is kind of the way. That would be like an example of a double meaning that you are going to see here. Again, what's interesting about this for me, if you can separate this from just the ideal of being, you know, Bible and Scripture and just this thing that was written down. But get in time with this, with Habakkuk, where he's seeing his corrupt culture. God is bringing the Babylonians in that's going to destroy them. And they're like on the top of their game. I mean, think of countries or empires or people that are at the top of their game. They seem like you cannot touch them. I mean, no one was more glorious than Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, to go to see Nebuchadnezzar would be very intimidating. They'd always bring the kings that they'd conquered to stand before Nebuchadnezzar and then send them back so they could get an image of who they were dealing with. And, of course, it was very intimidating. But now the Lord is speaking out to Habakkuk, who would be intimidated by the Babylonians, and is saying, you see, this is not going to last. This is not sustainable. And the advice that I got out of this, you know, or encouragement, was some of the things we're staring at today. And we know these things, but it's like, it's not going to be like this forever. I mean, it may get worse, and it will get worse in Habakkuk's day. And that's chapter 3 we're going to talk about. He's never going to see these things take place. It's just going to get worse for Habakkuk, and he's going to end up dying, and there's going to be no Jerusalem, no temple. He's never going to see the good days again. He's going down. But as far as Nebuchadnezzar or the Babylonians, this is not the final word. They're going to cycle through and perish. And the thing is, they did not know that. They thought they're going to beat the system. So there are people today, and again, I would assume somewhere in the world, and you maybe you can think of ideas of who you think those groups or people may be, or nations or countries, empires. But without the Lord Jesus Christ, they're going to cycle through, and there's going to be not, it's going to flip flop on them. Today they may be bringing oppression and taking stuff from other people, other nations. But as you're going to see here in this very first one, the very fact you took this from the Persians, you're on top. You can take whatever you want. But when this cycle's through, you've actually, in a sense, borrowed from them. And what you thought you were taking from them, they were actually just loaning it to you. And now you've cycled through, and now it's time to pay them back with interest. It's that typical, just like it turns, whatever you sow, you're going to reap. And when you look at our world today, and you look at people that are in power today or however, if they are not acting with integrity, or they think they're beating the system, they think they're setting themselves up. And again, I think about possibly people today, what is going on in our nation, our culture. You don't know. You can't tell. But it would appear, I'll make this comment and try to move on. It would appear that there are some elite people in our culture that have given up on America. They think there's something bigger coming. They think there's a new wave coming, and they're kind of playing it off, possibly trying to sell it to the masses, you know, the common person, about, oh, America's a bad, corrupt country. There's a history of oppression, and, you know, don't treat women right, and all these bad, bad things. And they're selling that to the public. Are you believing that? Okay, good. Because what we're really doing is just trying to get you off center, and you're looking at that, so you'll let us dismantle this so we can get on the next ship that's coming. We're going to bury America and jump ships. They're going to take all of whatever they've got, their gold, their possessions, their titles, and get into the new world order, or the, what's George Bush call it? Reset. What is that term? The new wave. What? Help me out. You know what I'm talking about? New World Order. But there's another phrase that I've heard. It's the Great Reset. Right. And maybe it's happening, maybe it's not. But if it is happening and they're just crushing people, and we're going to lose everything, just like if it be in northern Israel, if it be in Judah, whichever prophet, if it's Amos, if it's Habakkuk, if it's Nahum, there's the elite crushing the middle class into poverty, because they are siding with the new up-and-coming Egyptian empire, or the new up-and-coming Assyrian empire, and they're on the new wave. And I got to think something like that is happening up here above our heads, that something bigger is happening, and that we're just being sold a line of, you know, America's bad, and you get oppressed, and they're going to be jumping ship. Now, the point being, they may think they're going to pull it off, but what they are doing is going to cycle back on them. So we're talking about Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians in these verses, but it would apply to the Assyrians. It would apply to the Persians or the Romans. It would apply to any government that becomes oppressive, even today, if it's taking place. So here we go. What you've got on page 2, and I've showed you this before, I've added a few things to it. These are the five woes. I've got the word woe underlined. And remember, that is the word H-O-Y in the Greek, which could mean aha, aha. And there's section. And I tried the best I could by underlining. There's a theme in each, because there's five woes. They're not, sometimes they sound like it's just being repetitive, but there's a theme. And I tried to capture, and I think if we study through these, you could maybe even come up with a better, more, you know, snappier little synopsis than what I've got. But woe 1, chapter 2, verse 6b, up to verse 8, that's payback for stolen treasure, for example, will result in you will be in debt and you'll be plundered. You've plundered, and now because you've plundered, you're actually in debt, and now someone's going to plunder you. Woe 2, payback for building the house with evil, which will result in, because you built a house to protect yourself so that no one could ever harm you, your house, your family, your life, you're completely protected, similar to Nineveh being up there and protected, no one could get to Nineveh, in a day, it falls in a day, because it's going to result in loss of life, loss of dwelling, and loss of a dynasty. Woe 3, payback for building with blood and iniquity, meaning in the end, everything you built, nothing remains, but the Lord is still there. Everything you built is gone, but guess what? The Lord is still there. Woe 4, payback for using your glory to shame others. You have glory, so you're free to shame others and use others as you want. Well, that's going to come back to you, where the Lord's wrath is going to come around to you. You maybe were used, for example, Nebuchadnezzar maybe was used to bring judgment on Jerusalem or bring down the Assyrian Empire, but you're going to use your glory to shame others instead of to bring glory to God. Well, God's going to raise up the Persians and do the same thing to you. He's going to bring wrath and turn your glory into shame. And the last one, woe 5, is payback for searching for answers in deception, basically idol worship. Because you allowed yourself to go to idols and search for answers where there are no answers, there is no truth. I can compare it to our culture today. We say we follow the science. We used to. But we politicized or financed science to our own benefit. And we've even twisted false philosophies. We've gone over and we're changing sexual identity. We're changing science to match this false reality. So now we're going over to this false reality we've created and searching for an answer. We're not actually bowing down in front of an idol or an image, but we are taking the questions and social issues and governmental issues and things we need answers for and going over here and first running through the filter of this false philosophy. How will this sound on the news? How will this align with the college agenda? How will this align with all these focus groups? Okay, here's our answer. Well, you don't have an answer. You've got deception. And because payback for searching for answers in deception, you're eventually going to stand silent before the Lord. This is all eventually going to cycle right back to your Creator. And the only thing you're going to have in your hands is a bunch of deception that you knew was deception that you're trying to manipulate. And you're going to be silent and the Lord will be speaking. And so that would make some sense right there. I'll read through them right off this page here, page 2, so we can hear them. And this is the English Standard Version. Woe to him who heaps up what is not his own, for how long? And loads himself with pledges. Will not his debtors suddenly arise, and those awake who will make you tremble? Then you will be spoil for them, because you have plundered many nations. All the remnant of the peoples shall plunder you. For the blood of man and violence to the earth, to cities and all who dwell in them. So all of these woes are going to include, they're going to include the sin or sins and they're going to include the payback for those sins. Because you did this, or sometimes it's this, this, and this, and they may be categorized in a particular woe. Because you did these things, this is what you're going to get. And this payback is equal to this. It's you know, what you sow is what you're going to reap. And it's not, again, do not let this just become a catchy little psalm-like saying. It's like, oh, that rhymes, that's clever. This is reality. You do these things, this is what you're not going to get to keep this. You cannot build in sin. You cannot build in violence. You cannot protect yourself by being cruel. If you think that's going to work, it's going to come back and you're going to be the one oppressed, being treated cruel. Everything you did to protect yourself is going to come back to you. I mean, Jesus taught it, Paul taught it, it's in Proverbs, it's in Bible stories throughout, it's in history, it's in Shakespeare. It's a principle of life. Everybody knows this. And that's what's scary about where we're at as a culture, is we think we're going to get away with this. I mean, think of the things that are ridiculous, and some of the things we don't know. Some of the things we've got to just kind of have opinions and kind of let everybody kind of think through this. It's like, you know, you talk about, you know, COVID. It's like, what's right and what's wrong? I don't know. We're trying to figure this out. But there's certain things we know are wrong. Abortion is wrong. You're going to build women's rights based on freedom of for abortion? That's women. You're going to sell that to the public? There's payback coming. That's going to come back and bite you. You're going to sell the sexual gender. You're going to change gender. You're going to switch your gender. It's like, and you're going to teach children this? Well, that's going to there's payback coming. I mean, these are things I can guarantee. Abortion is wrong. Telling a little girl she's a boy and then giving her surgery or whatever. That's not going to end well for those that are doing. Now, there's certain things I can't answer. Like, you know, what is COVID? Where did it come from? What's going on? I got ideas. I'm suspicious. But I can't answer certain things you just don't know. I mean, should I have voted for George W. Bush? I thought so. Now I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, I can't believe. Oh, my God, I want my vote back. You know, like, I'm not sure how you feel, but I was excited about him at one time. And now I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, look, they all look exactly the same. Clinton, Bush, and Obama. I mean, did you see that selfie? They took a selfie this weekend. It's like, oh, my gosh. James Harris, he's a Texas a talk show host, James Harris. He put the picture up and said, you know, caption this. And everybody's putting captions on, birds of a feather and all these things, because it's all three, and they're all kind of sticking the face. And it looked like George W. was taking the selfie with Clinton and Obama with him. And I just put on their cap letters, not Washington, Jefferson, and Adams. I mean, because if you had a picture of Washington and Jefferson and Adams together, they'd be like, whoa, that's pretty cool. But you got the, like, it's like, they may think they're Washington, Jefferson, and Adams, but it's like, they're like three clowns that duped the nation. Anyway, it's coming back. And okay, here we go. What was I saying? Okay, I was reading number one. Number two. Number two, woe. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house, to set his nest on high, to be safe from the reach of harm. You have devised shame for your house by cutting off many peoples. You have forfeited your life, for the stone will cry out from the wall, and the beam from the woodwork respond. In other words, you thought you were building protection, but as you were building what you thought was protection, you were actually setting your dynasty up for utter shame. This will be great. We'll be protected forever. No, you're not. Within three generations, you're going to be totally embarrassed because you did this corruptly. Now, notice three generations. Again, there's five kings listed here, but it's actually three generations. You've got Nebuchadnezzar, one of his sons, a couple other people, and then it would be a grandson, Nabonidus. And that was the three generations there. But, I mean, that's how fast this comes back. I mean, in a lifetime, you know, it may not seem like it's happening fast enough. But if you look at a few generations, these things, it doesn't take millenniums for some of these things to transpire. Woe three. Woe to him who builds a town with blood and founds a city on iniquity. Behold, is it not from the Lord of hosts that peoples labor merely for fire and nations weary themselves for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Now, I will point out one, two, three woes, and at the end of the third woe, We start talking about the Lord. Then we go, woe 4 and 5, and that ends with talking about the Lord again, saying the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silent before him. So those are your two places in these woes. It's Babylon, woe, Babylon, woe, Babylon, woe. But the whole earth is going to be filled with the glory of the Lord. Woe to Babylon, woe to Babylon. But the Lord is in his holy temple, and the whole earth is silent before him. So again, there's always that contrast. You're looking at Babylon, and then there's always this up here, the Lord, who is in control. Woe 4. Woe to him who makes his neighbors drink. You pour out your wrath and make them drunk in order to gaze at their nakedness. Now, this would be talking about Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian glory, meaning they've got glory, so they use their glory to influence others so they can use others. And this can go all the way to just using them for their own pleasure, using them for their own advantage, or it can actually get into sexual immorality. And I think all of that would be included, especially when you start talking about riddles and scorns and these sayings. So they're using their glory to bring shame on others. You, it says, will have your fill of shame instead of glory. In other words, what you're doing to others, it's going to cycle right back to you. Drink yourself and show your uncircumcision. I mean, continue doing this, and in the process of treating others this way, you're going to expose yourself. The cup of the Lord's right hand will come around to you. Meaning, what's happening, and again, what you know this, but Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon is being chosen to take the cup of God's wrath and hand it or bring it to Jerusalem. Well, during that process, they're giving themselves glory. They're giving themselves credit. Well, that cup that they're bringing on Jerusalem, it's going to be passed to somebody else, and they're going to bring it over to Babylon. So it's going to go from Babylon. They're going to hand it to Persia, and although Babylon brought the cup of God's wrath to Jerusalem, they're going to hand it to the Persians, and the Persians are going to bring it right back to the Babylonians and pour out God's wrath on Babylon. So it's like, just because you're in the driver's seat today, God may be putting you in the driver's seat for his own purpose. You got to make sure you keep your eye on God, because if you start looking at yourself, you're going to miss what's going on. And that's what it is. They're blind. They do not see. And that's why they're being mocked. You don't see. You think you've got power and control and glory and that you're going to bring your wrath on all these people. It's like, no, no, no. God put you in a position to do his work. And because you don't realize that, you don't understand that this is going to be taken from you and given to someone else, and it's going to be your turn to get judged by the same cup that you used to judge somebody else, which is, again, a very humbling thought. I mean, historically, in nations, or even in your own private life. The cup of the Lord's right hand will come around to you, and utter shame will come upon your glory. The violence done to Lebanon will overwhelm you, as will the destruction of the beast that terrified them, for the blood of man and violence to the earth, to cities and all who dwell in them. So they were violent to men. I'll just point this out. God is holding them accountable for being violent to men, violent to men's environment, if you'd call it like the forest of Lebanon, and to all the cities that dwell in them, including the animals. Woe 5. What, and here's the talking about the idol and the false truth. What profit is an idol when its maker has shaped it a metal image, a teacher of lies? Again, you can think about idols and what they represent, but for me, I go instantly to what profit is a false philosophy. You've rejected reality and tried to build your own truth. And that's what it says right here. Its maker has shaped it a metal object, a teacher of lies. You've rejected truth. You've rejected reality. You've come over here and you've molded your own concept of what you think should be real. And now you start asking it for questions and directions, if it be evolution, if it be secular humanism, if it be, a variety of other things, even communism. This is the way the world works. How should we all solve our problems with this false philosophy? It's teaching you lies. It's teaching you it's not going to work. And you start applying that, and then you look at our universities that are taking all these false philosophies and shoving them into people's brains, getting them wired to begin to solve problems using the theory of evolution and communism and Marxism and all these other false philosophies. And now you're going to start going to these false philosophies for answers. Do you understand? It's a disaster. You're eating, you're devouring lies. For its maker trusts in its own creation. meaning the person that made this false philosophy is trusting that this false philosophy is going to respond in reality, which it can't because it's not true. For its maker trusts in his own creation when he makes speechless idols. Woe to him who says to a wooden thing, I would say, who says to a false philosophy, says to a wooden thing, awake, to a silent stone, arise. Can this teach? Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, and there is no breath in it at all. You may decorate it in universities and give people doctorate's degrees and all these things and have all these philosophers come in and expound with all their rhetoric and all this philosophy of evolution or communism. It's like, oh, wow, you can overlay it with gold and degrees and prestige and offices. But it's like, in the end, it's not saying anything. There's no truth. It's there, but it's not helping. Can this teach? Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, and there is no breath in it at all. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. And so instead of doing that, you could go to the Lord. But ultimately, in the end, the Lord is going to stand, and all these false philosophies, all these false teachers are going to merely stand silent before the Lord when they come face to face with ultimate reality. The ultimate truth is revealed to them, and theirs is just burned away. They'll have nothing. So that's a snippet of all that. I hope I've got something yet to say when we go through these notes. Here we go. Page 3. Here's your first woe, and I've got, again, circled there at the top, the three little, the proverb, the taunting, the riddle. Woe to him who heaps up what is not his own for how long and loads himself with pledges. Notice he's taking, this is a key phrase right here, this ideal of pledges. And it's not being taken correctly. Will not your debtors suddenly arise and those awake who will make you tremble? Then you will be spoiled for them. So in other words, they've taken money. They've taken possessions from these people over here. They've taken these things from them. Well, now they stole them. They plundered them. And in their mind, they think they've earned them. They've taken them. But actually, that belongs to these people. And so while you've got these pledges, you're actually building up interest. Well, when that cup of God's wrath is taken from the Babylonians, pouring it out on Jerusalem, and handed to the Persians to bring to the Babylonians, well, now all of a sudden, the power base is going to switch, and those people that have been plundered, those that remain of those people, are going to say, yeah, you know all that stuff you took from us? We're going to consider it a loan, and now you owe us. You pay us back, and since you're not willing to pay us back, we'll plunder you, and that is going to be now the cup of wrath is in their hands. So if you turn at the bottom of page 3, it says, this is the first of five oracles of judgment. The crime or sin is identified. And here's the crime or sin. Piles of stolen goods. And again, you can see the Assyrians did the same thing. This sounds like Nahum talking to the Assyrians in Nineveh. He makes himself wealthy by extortion and pledges. So that's the same word, pledges or extortion. It can be translated either way. Turn the page. Also, you have plundered many nations. You have shed human blood. You have destroyed mankind and his environment, the lands, the cities, and everyone in it. That is the sin. Now, the payback, the fair retribution or just payback, is also identified in those verses. Your creditors will suddenly arise. And what do you mean? The creditors, who gave us credit? Well, you thought you plundered them, but actually, they were loaning you. In the big scheme of life, they're actually just loaning you this material you took, and now they're here to collect. Well, they can't do that. We plundered them. Well, that was when you were in control, but now that's switched. In three generations, that's switched. You're no longer in control. Your creditors will suddenly arise. Again, hear that word suddenly. Your creditors will make you tremble. You will become their prey. People left of those you plundered will plunder you. So you plundered these people, and anybody that's left is going to come back and plunder you. It's a complete cycle, and so you can see the woe. Point 2, the extortion or pledges is the word abtit. It refers to collecting pledges taken as security by a creditor. This often includes exploitation and enslavement. It's not. It's a word that means, you know, you take something in pledge, but it also means that the person you're taking something in pledge from, you've given them something and taken something in pledge, they're now your property. You can extort them, you can enslave them, they are basically owned. And Babylon took these people and extorted from them. Well, these are going to be the same people that arise. Point A, the same word that is A-B-T-I-T, that it literally means a cloud of dirt, which again gives it a double meaning. This pledges, which now, as time goes on, it's nothing more than just a cloud of dirt. There's nothing really there. You took these things, but it really wasn't yours. You had them, you built the glory around you, but as time moved on, you realized there was nothing here. It was just an illusion because it really belongs to them and it's all gone. Also, the doubles back on them because of what you sow, you will reap. The extortion actually became a loan that they ended up owing interest on, so the oppressed actually became the creditors. So in this illustration, woe is the Babylonians because you're oppressing, but understand, you're about to become the ones that are creditors. You're the ones that are going to owe all this that you took. In time, I mean, just reading that makes you kind of think, whoa, be careful how you start, you know, taking things or planning things or think, well, I got control of this situation. Well, if you don't handle it correctly, this situation is going to flip-flop and you're going to be on the underside of it. It's similar to a memorial sound. Okay, those are some sounds in there. There's double meanings. Your creditors also means to bite. And so the creditors, the word means bite, they'll actually come and take their bite out of it, meaning this is my part of it. Proverbs. There's five Proverbs that we can get out of this that are in the book of Proverbs, as you can see. Proverbs 28:8 says, whoever increases wealth by taking interest or profit from the poor amasses it for another who will be kind to the poor. So although you took this from the poor, it's not yours. You're just collecting it. It's going to be handed to somebody else who's actually going to benefit the poor. That's good to know. I mean, you see things going on in the world. Someone may be in power, may be abusive, but that eventually is going to be transferred to someone who's going to be using it to benefit the poor. Now, this is the Word of God. This is the way the world works. This is a reality. You may take it, you may think you've got it, but you're not going to keep it. It'll eventually cycle back and go right back to the poor. Proverbs 22:16. One who oppresses the poor to increase his wealth and one who gives gifts to the rich, both come to poverty. And you can just think about it. Those are people right now that are increasing their wealth and giving gifts to the rich for political benefits. Okay, relax. They're both going to end up in poverty. It doesn't work. Now, maybe they'll get through it, but their dynasty, their family, you wonder about like someone like Pelosi. What are you trying to do? Why are you still here? Oh, you think you're maybe paving, or Biden, or what are you just paving the way for your family? You think you're building a dynasty that's going to be on the New World Order? If that's what you think is going to take place, you're not paving the way, building a nest on high to protect your family in the future. You're setting them up for utter disgrace and a fall. And not necessarily in the news, but they will eventually be utterly poor. Well, if this is true, if that's what they're doing. Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. And the Babylonians gained it hastily. They just took it. Sudden disaster, Proverbs 6:15. Therefore, disaster will overtake him in an instant. He will suddenly be destroyed without remedy. You may be on the top of your game. You may be with Belshazzar. You may be with Belshazzar, partying, drinking out of the golden goblets, having the time of your life. And within the next moment, you're going to be overrun and executed. It will suddenly, I mean, they're actually having a party, and suddenly that night, everything was taken from them. And Proverbs 29:1, he who is often reproved yet stiffens his neck will suddenly be broken beyond healing. Point six, justice and vengeance, because you have pillaged many nations, all that remains of the people shall pillage you. The concept of all those poetic justice, that all these poetic justice will come. I can't remember what I was writing there. That don't even make sense. Chapter 5, chapter 2, verse 9 through 11. This is the second woe. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house. Now we're going to be talking about, so you kind of see what that was talking about. It's talking about plundering people and taking your stuff. It's going to cycle back where you're now in debt to the people you took from. You didn't take it from them. You is a loan to you. Now we're going to start talking about the house. Building a house for the future. You're going to get so much gold, so much money, so much protection that your house, and this is going to have double meaning, your dwelling and your dynasty, your family, is going to be set for the future. Everything is going to be beautiful. You've got so much money, so much power, so big of walls. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house, to set his nest on high, to be safe from the reach of harm. Meaning, aha, you're trying to build a house that's so protected, no one will be able, and you don't care what it takes. You're using evil to get this done. Aha, understand. Over here in your false reality, it looks like a plan. But in God's reality, anyone who builds a house like that, aha, it ain't going to work. It will not work. You have devised shame for your house by cutting off many peoples. In the process of trying to build a house for yourself, you've cut off people. You've destroyed people in an attempt to make your future look good. And because you've done that, you've devised shame. There's not going to be glory over here. There's going to be shame. You may have got it staged. It may come out in the media. It may be recorded in the history books. Oh, what a great kingdom, what a great dynasty, what great power. But when it actually manifests, it's not going to be glory and protection. It's going to be shame because you've destroyed people. You have fortified your life. You have forfeited your life. In an attempt to build for the future, you've actually forfeited your own life. And then it says, for the stone will cry out from the wall and the beam from the woodwork respond. Now, that last verse 11, it appears one of two ways. The stone will cry out from the wall. In other words, they would have taken building material from other countries that they'd plundered and brought them, and there's record of that. Or they took the wealth from the other countries and had building materials made or produced, and they built these into the wall. So the stones in the wall, how did they get put there? Well, by extortion, or we stole them. And the beam in the woodwork, that'd be the structural beam that goes over the door frame, that will respond, meaning it was set there by injustice. And the very fact that you have that nice of a structure is a testimony that this was built corruptly. Or it is on the other side, the stones that you set in place for your high dwelling of protection are going to be taken. And, this is perfect. We'll use this in the Persian Empire. Look at this structure. We're going to take that into the Persian Empire. And the things that you built for yourself, that you're going to build for your future, they're going to testify that you're no longer here because they're now got Persian inscriptions on them. The Babylonian Empire has collapsed. So it means one thing or the other. Here's some points, page 5. They used evil prophets to ensure that, that's the wrong word, prophets. I think it's supposed to be money prophets. They used evil prophets to ensure they had their future generations would be safe. But in reality, all they did was prepare shame and downfall for their family and their dynasty. By corruptly protecting themselves, they violated reality and truth. Point 3, I've got underlined in the transliteration or the interlinear up on the top there on the right side, I've got underlined the word B-E-S-A. And that is B-E-S-A in the Hebrew is the word gain. And that word gain, it means, I've got it written down there. It means gain by violence, a gain by wrongdoing. You're going to do something, this gain is bad. It's gain by violence. But notice, in front of that word, or in the Hebrew behind it, but it'd be in front of it, is the word R-A, and that means evil. So this word by itself means gain by violence. This is a negative word. It's not gain like you worked or you've invested money. It's gain by violence. It means social oppression. You've done something to gain this, and it's wrong. But it's described as evil gain by violence. And so I put in here, for example, Notice it's doubled up with the word evil, which would be like saying evil extortion or bad theft. It's doubled. This is extortion, but now it's evil extortion. It's bad, which would be part of the way this is being written, emphasizing it. The house refers to two things. Again, a double meaning. I've said that a couple times. The Babylonian dwelling and the Babylonian dynasty, both are going to be destroyed. Proverbially, they were practicing evil, ra, to prevent ruin. Now, this is clever, and you can see it right there in the interlinear. Remember, the word ra means evil. It means evil gain. But at the very end of that, we're going to have to look on the left side. It says, woe to him who gets evil gain for his house, to set his nest on high, to be safe from the reach of harm. In the English Standard, that word harm is the word, and you can see it right there, right? You see what it is? It's the word ra. You have evil, corrupt gain that you're using to prevent yourself from having to face evil. What? You're using evil to avoid evil. And so that in itself is comical. And you can see the word I've got circled, ra, right there. One is translated disaster. You're using evil to avoid disaster, but it's the same. You're using disasters on other people to prevent disaster coming from you. And that's kind of clever in the writing. And there's many things like that. But that's something we can catch. The judgment is equal to the sin. For example, there's three things. Point six, evil gain for your house equals shame for your house. B, cutting off many peoples means you have forfeited your life. Set your nest or your dwelling on high. Well, those same stones from your wall and beams from your woodwork will be carried off or will cry out and respond. So you've set your nest up on high, but that's actually a testimony to what you've done. Matching Proverbs 15:27, whoever is greedy for unjust gain troubles his own household, but he who hates bribes will live. Proverbs 1:18-19, these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set ambushes for their own lives. I mean, they're talking about people that plan traps for others. It's like you think you're trapping someone else, but in the very fact that you're doing it, you're setting a trap in man's eyes. There are people getting away with things. They plan someone else's downfall, and it happens. But as God's looking at it, it's like, well, that's not the way it works. You're just seeing half the circle. Here's man's plan. I'm going to go from here, and I'm going to do this evil thing, and I'm going to have gain. It's like, well, that's not the way the world works. The world is a complete circle. You sow this, you're going to reap this. So the world may only see this. Ah, they did this thing and no one caught them. No, this is what's going to happen. This, we may not understand this. We may not see this. And that's part of Habakkuk's complaint. God is saying, whoa, it's like this is, because this is part of God's response. This is what you're going to see, Habakkuk. But understand, he's forfeiting his own life. By destroying these people, he's destroying himself. Relax. That's going to come back on him. And again, we can learn from that to encourage ourselves to trust God. These men lie in wait for their lives, their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. That's Proverbs. Such are the ways. That is the way. Everyone who is greedy for unjust gain, it's going to take away your life. Well, I'm going to be very careful. You can't. I'm going to jump out of the airplane and flap my arms really fast. You can't flap your arms. You've begun a cycle, and once you do this, it's coming back. Interesting. There's a picture of it's 20 inches by 22 inches, cuneiform. It's in the British Museum. The East India House inscription. It's inscribed by Nebuchadnezzar. It's in cuneiform. It says, amongst other things, notice this, how close this is to our text. Merciful Marduk, that was his god, May the temple I have built endure all time, and may I be satisfied with its splendor. In its midst may I attain old age. Nebuchadnezzar is writing this. May I be sated with offspring. Therein may I receive the heavy tribute of all mankind. There it is. May I receive the tribute. Why does he want that tribute of all mankind? Because he's using that tribute of all mankind to build himself a lofty house high, a dynasty, a protective house that evil can't do. He's using evil to build a house that will protect him from evil. And then he says this, underlined at the very end, may my descendants live therein forever, and guess what? And rule over the people. I'm going to oppress them today to set my house up forever, and may my descendants live in this house, this dynasty, this dwelling forever, continuing to oppress the people. I mean, they're in his own words, that, and God is looking at it going, Nebi, you're doing this and trying to prepare for the future, but it doesn't end here and go off into your future in your own fictional world. It goes like this. And you have forfeited your life by taking the life of others. And that is the second woe, and we've got three woes that are left. All right, I appreciate you being here. I'll pray, and we are done. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We do ask that we ourselves would take warning, that we'd be careful in our own thoughts, our own actions, that we take Proverbs seriously and take these words of exhortation to heart. Father, we do thank you for the word. We thank you for the chance to live this time in history, and ask that we would do our job to live a life pleasing to you, but also to serve others and to bring light to many other people. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your patience.